Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, it's not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the five most recent ones, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and all of the shows, including the most recent five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now this week we're going to be talking about the concept of creating empathy. And you know, the titles, the subjects of the shows are announced a couple of days ahead. And we got quite a few emails about this one because there was a question asked by quite a few people of whether you could actually create empathy, that that was something you could do, or was empathy something that happened that was instinctive, that was not created? So I think first we're going to have a definition of empathy. How's that? And I didn't do anything fancy. I just went and Googled it on Webster, and it's just a very basic definition. We're going, for the purpose of this discussion, going to say that empathy is the Webster's definition. And I know this is a global show, but Webster is, of course, the basic dictionary in the English language, in the United States at least. And it is considered to be just a general authority about definitions. And so empathy is defined as the experiencing as one's own of the feelings of another. The experiencing as one's own of the feelings of another. That's kind of a basic working definition. What do you think? And so the first question that we're going to pose tonight is, really, can we create an atmosphere of empathy? Can empathy be created? Can it be worked on? Can we have it as a goal? And thank you very much for all of your participation. I see that we have lots of participants this evening. Thank you very much. And you know what? I see that we've got two camps on this, two ideas. Some people are fairly positive that yes, we can, and some people are fairly positive that no, you cannot create empathy. So let's do the people who think not first. What do you think of that? And thank you very much. We have lots of people participating. Thank you very much. Please email in your questions and your comments and like that recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. And let's see. Let's start with Uma, who says, no, you cannot create empathy because empathy is personal and needs to be sincere and of the heart. Personal and sincere. Well, yes, I think that's absolutely true. And quite a few people are saying the equivalent of, well, you can't fake empathy. No, you can't. You cannot fake empathy because you can't. If you don't have empathy, you can't say that you understand, really, that you understand someone else's feelings. But I don't know that if you work on creating it that it's less than sincere, but that's an interesting opinion. Empathy is personal and needs to be sincere and of the heart. And Jan says, to follow up on Uma's comment, that empathy cannot be creative because it is instinctive. Instinctive being something that you don't consciously do, something that just happens. You gain empathy. You have empathy or you don't. In fact, Marcus says you cannot create the feelings for another. You either have them or you don't. You cannot create feelings for another. Well, it's really the feelings, your ability to feel as they feel. It's not so much feelings for another, I suppose, but maybe that's just an argument of semantics. Yeah, Marcus says that's what he meant, that you can't feel for another. You either have it or you don't. It just happens to you. And let's see, I see a lot of people who feel that empathy cannot be created, that it just happens, are using words like visceral and instinctive and not intellectual. It is subconscious. Now let's think about that for a moment. Because I think that if that's true, and it is visceral and instinctive and subconscious, and you can't really create it, it's not something that you can strive for to create an atmosphere of empathy. Empathy must be very hard to do, and it would be a very valuable tool in our ability to work towards a common goal, isn't it? Empathy is rather important because it is important to be able to understand the feelings of someone else, their opinions, their needs, their basis for their argument, for their thoughts, their feelings. And not even such feelings towards an issue, not even generic feelings like love or something, but an actual issue feeling, an issue opinion, we'll call it, and why they feel that way, how strong it is. So if that's, let's see, visceral, instinctive, subconscious, Now let's think about the people who are voting yes. Yes, and as you can see, I'm rather in the yes camp, I think, because although I do agree that empathy oftentimes is instinctive, you understand someone especially, and this has been brought out by Jan and Uma and others, especially if you have a common basis, if you feel rather the same. It's easier to have empathy with someone whom you are similar to in opinion, in background, in culture. You're similar to them, so you have empathy for them because, yes, people are putting that, they're sending in because they are like you, right? And you understand people that are like you more readily. But a lot of times when we do a get-together, a workshop, a seminar, a mediation, the people who are at issue, although they have a common goal, are oftentimes not really like each other. They're not like you. They have different backgrounds, different ideas, different issues, and we still can have empathy for them and empathy for their side and understand where they are. Well, you know, there's an American expression that says where they're coming from. Where they're coming from. It means what they think, what they mean, why it is that they feel in this way. You can understand where they're coming from, not physically, but in an emotional manner. So let's think about the people who are voting yes for a few minutes here. We've got quite a few people to say, yes, you can create an atmosphere of empathy. Kurt says that you can grow into empathy as you work together. You can gain empathy. And isn't that the point, really, of the Recipe for Peace Now concept of, I know it's an overused word, but it's a concept of networking, of getting together and trying to resolve differences so that we can achieve a common goal. And one of the reasons we do that is so that we can understand each other better as we work together. We can grow into empathy as you work together. Now, this is an interesting point that's being made by quite a few people, and Indira makes it with an example. Thank you very much for all of your participation. And Indira says that you can have empathy, certainly can have empathy, because you can learn to love someone. So you can learn to have empathy. You can learn to love someone. And she says that she actually has an arranged marriage, and that she and her spouse did not particularly know each other when they got married, but they learned to have empathy and love and understand the feelings of the other person afterward. They learned it as they worked together and they lived together and they resolved issues together. And I've got quite a few people pointing out that that is maybe true, but she was probably rather similar in background to her spouse. So she says, yes, that is true, that they were somewhat similar in background and their families knew each other and like that. But still, that's still learning to have empathy for someone else. Because even if you have similar backgrounds and someone is like you in many ways, does that necessarily mean that you have empathy for each other? And no, the answer is no. Yes, quite a few people. In fact, I have quite a few people are saying that sometimes that means that you can really, really dislike each other because you understand each other too thoroughly. Well, I suppose that's true. And you know, several people have used an expression that is fairly common. And the expression is, and I know that I'm in the States, and probably the people who have used this expression are also in the States, but it's fairly universal, and this is a global show. But they have used the expression, familiarity breeds contempt. That is a very old expression, and of course it means that sometimes you can truly lack empathy for someone because you do understand their feelings. That cuts the other way, doesn't it? You can have a lack of empathy because you're really similar to each other and you do understand. So thank you everyone for all your participation. Thank you for Indira for your example. That's a very interesting example about marriage growing into love and to empathy for another person. And Francis makes the point, and others do too, that empathy creation can be gradual. And you see a lot of people who said they didn't think it could be created indicated that it was an instinctive or subconscious gaining of the understanding of the feelings of another's as your own. But actually, I think it's an interesting point that when we get together and we work our differences out and we work towards a common goal and we talk and we explain what we want and what we need and really why, because the why question is asked a lot and the explanations come, that empathy can be built gradually. As you see the other person as, well, I suppose as more similar to yourself than different. Because people have the most empathy for those that they feel connected to. And it's really a connection thought. And, of course, that's the entire Recipe for Peace Now idea in a nutshell. That you create a convivial setting so that people can get to know each other. And once they know each other, they will be able to have empathy, to have understanding, to be able to work together, even though the reason that they want the ultimate goal that you're working together for may, as an underlying reason, be different. As long as the goal is the same, that's what counts. That's why you work together. And so I suppose now we have reached another question, haven't we? And several people are asking this, and it's a very good question. We've talked about creating empathy, and we've talked about it in a manner that is really one of understanding the basis for another person's opinions, for another person's thoughts and feelings, and how they relate to the issues at hand, right? That's the ultimate thing. And so I think the next question that we're going to think about is whether empathy and understanding are the same thing. Are they synonymous? Are what we really talking about understanding? Are they the same? And thank you all for your participation. Shara puts it rather succinctly. She says empathy is more instinctive, but understanding can create empathy. What a good way of putting it. Empathy is more instinctive, but understanding can create empathy. So they're not the same thing, right? Empathy is when you truly feel another's feelings. And understanding, I guess, is the more pragmatic part that will create empathy, but also create a path towards success in achieving your final goals, your ultimate ideas, whatever needs to be done. You see? And that's the key to it. Richard says that understanding doesn't have to be complete, but will lead to a better working relationship, even if it is not as strong as empathy. So empathy is really a connection, right? It's really understanding the feelings of someone. We won't even use the word understanding. It's really, really feeling them as your own, really, really connecting with someone. But understanding will get us close enough to empathy that we can work together, that we can achieve what we've come to achieve. As Richard says, understanding doesn't have to be complete, but will lead to a better working relationship, even if it is not as strong as empathy. You see, we don't have to become soulmates, right? We have to understand the underlying ideas, have empathy towards one another, one's other person's feelings, and really why they feel that way. And we need to be able to do that for the simple reason that it will make us better in negotiation, better along the path pushing forward towards reaching the common goal. You see? But it doesn't have to be complete either, does it? It can just be empathy on a single issue, on an idea, on a way to do something. And Marcia says that understanding the position of another may lead to better negotiation, but not actually defined as empathy. The experiencing as one's own of the feelings of another. So she says that understanding and empathy are definitely not the same, because understanding the position of another may lead to better negotiation, but not to the defined idea of empathy, which is the the experiencing as one's own of the feelings of another. Experiencing as one's own. That's stronger than understanding, isn't it? Experiencing as one's own. But understanding is pretty darn close, because it means that you will experience the idea that the other person has about the issues, about what needs to be done, and you will have understanding and, well, I'm going to dare to call it empathy, for why they want the same thing you do, the ultimate goal of your get-together, of your meeting, of your group, of whatever it is you're doing. The ultimate goal and how to get to that ultimate goal is where the empathy and the understanding of the underlying issues, the underlying concepts, the underlying biases even, of the other person, and why they want the common goal, which may be a different reason than yours. But you're really all working towards the same thing, aren't you? So that's not a problem. And I've gotten quite a few people asking this question, and I'm going to paraphrase it, and it's, do you need to agree with someone's position to have understanding and empathy? And, you know, a lot of, this is interesting, because I actually would have said as a general reaction, and thank you all for your participation. I always learn something on these shows, and they cause me to think. And I hope that you all learn something on these shows, and they cause you to think too. And we get quite a few returning people, and it's very wonderful. Thank you all for coming. And quite a few new people, thank you very much for being here, everyone, and for your participation. And it's so interesting, because I would have said no, just offhand, to the question, do you need to agree with someone's position to have understanding or to have empathy with them? Do you need to agree? And I've got quite a few people that are making the argument that yes, if you're truly going to have empathy and understanding, you probably agree with the person's position. And I will concede that I think that it is easier to have empathy and understanding if you agree with someone, because you're on the same, well, you know the expression, the same wavelength. You're on the same side. You're on the same, you've got the same ideas. You're similar to each other in your opinions, in your understanding, in your arguments. And yes, I think it's easier to agree, to have empathy and understanding with you agree, but I'm not so positive of what's necessary. But here, Anna says something very interesting. If you don't agree, then you cannot fully understand or have the feelings of another. If you don't agree, then you cannot fully understand or have the feelings of another. That's an interesting point. If you can't have the feelings of another, if they're not kind of similar to your feelings, huh? Well, I think it's easier, but Anna thinks that that's really a necessity. And people are agreeing with her and saying that yes, that you can indeed negotiate, that you can have a working relationship. It doesn't mean you hate each other or anything, or you can't work together. But in order to truly have understanding and empathy, you must agree with their position. Because if you don't agree, then you cannot fully understand or have the feelings of another. An interesting point. And Alberta says that you need the acceptance, or it won't work. A lot of people are agreeing with that. You know, that's an interesting point. Okay, and we've got also a lot of people are saying that no, you don't have to agree to understand or have empathy. you can have the understanding. You just don't. You can see where someone else is coming from, but not have to agree with it. Just understand it. And Sten says that often in negotiation, you can understand the issues, emotions of a different perspective and consider them without acceptance. Understand the issues and emotions of a different perspective and consider them without accepting them. I think that's a good point. You all know that I've done negotiation and mediation for many, many years. And oftentimes, I don't really agree. Usually, I'm the impartial third party. I'm not actually invested in the argument, which, of course, makes empathy easier if you are invested in the issues at hand, if you are really, really a party to them and not a third party impartial. But I think that it's easier to see a different perspective if you understand it and you don't have to accept it, but it will make negotiation easier. It will get you faster down the path towards your common goal. And Meryl says that when you walk in the shoes of another, you are borrowing the shoes, not buying them. That's an interesting way of putting it. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you, Meryl. I suppose it's also an American expression, to walk in the shoes of another. You can't understand something until you've walked in someone else's shoes. You understand their feelings and their commitment to an issue and why. And she says that when you walk in the shoes of another, you are borrowing the shoes, not buying them. You don't have to accept the ideas. You don't have to keep the shoes. You just have to understand what it is to wear them. That's a very interesting way of putting it. Thank you. That makes it kind of definite. And, you know, we've got quite a few participants. This is lovely. And the general consensus is that you don't have to accept the feelings as your own. You just have to understand them so that you can negotiate on a fair and also a convivial level, right? They don't have to have a bad atmosphere. Ty says that you can have empathy for the difficulty of a different position and understand the root cause without adopting it as your own. Empathy for the difficulty of a different position. How hard it is to do that. How hard it is to change. How hard it is to reach consensus and do a negotiation. You can have empathy for the difficulty of a different position and understand the root cause perhaps being cultural or social or religious or some other outside root cause. Understand the root cause without adopting it as your own. You see, you don't have to adopt the feelings. You just have to acknowledge them and think about what it is that is causing the various issues to be put forward. And Edward says that you must have understanding and a degree of empathy to reach consensus. You need understanding and a degree of empathy. That's not total empathy, it's just a degree of empathy. Understanding and a degree of empathy to reach consensus. Consensus reaching. I think that the more complex the issue, people are going, that depends. Yes, I've been accused of saying that depends a lot, and I'm trying not to, but it really does, it depends. The more complex the issue, the more you will have... You would need an understanding and a degree of empathy to reach consensus. You see, if it's really a one-issue, straightforward problem or needs a solution of that nature, you're less likely to need to delve very deeply into, well, I'm going to call it the psyche of another. But if you have a lot of complex issues and there's kind of, I don't like to use the word dissension, but not everyone is necessarily agreeing on the path, although they agree on the ultimate goal, that's when you get the degree of understanding and empathy to reach a consensus. You know, Laura's made, and other people, in fact, we've got a lot of people saying basically this, that empathy goes both ways. You can't have a one-sided incidence of empathy. You can be sympathetic to someone. You can be understanding. You can think about why, the question why. But they must reciprocate by doing so also, that it goes, it cuts both ways, that both parties need to make an effort towards understanding and empathy towards the others. Mm-hmm. And Gianna says that you can indeed create an atmosphere whereby all participants make a sincere effort towards reasoned understanding and empathy toward the other side. Oh, thank you, Gianna. Gianna, thank you. That's going to be the perfect segue into our potluck concept, right? But an atmosphere whereby all participants make a sincere effort towards reasonable understanding and empathy toward the other side. You know what? It's a really good point. I think the sincere effort will indeed very much help to create an atmosphere where we can have empathy for another person. And with that empathy, of course, comes some understanding, doesn't it? Some understanding of where the issues are and why someone feels very strongly towards one. And what is the underlying reason? And that's where the empathy and the understanding come in. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to create a convivial atmosphere either, right? Because it will give you more time to get to know each other, more time to reach accord and consensus. And yes, people are asking this, and they're going, are we headed towards the recipes? Yes, we are, because it's become that time of the show, hasn't it? Thank you very much for all of your participation. It's always so interesting the way the show kind of has its own life, and we reach all kinds of different opinions and different issues. Thank you very much for doing that. It's always interesting to hear from you. Now, we've reached, of course, the portion of our show where we talk about creating the convivial atmosphere using food as a tool to do so. And before we get into this, and yes, I see that some of you are already writing it in. Yes, thank you. I'm going to say what I always say, and for those of you who are new, you'll find this extremely interesting. And for those of you who are people who have been here before, thank you very much. And, well, yes, I'm going to say it again. You're right. Before you hold any kind of a get-together where there is eating involved, where there is food involved, you know, potluck, even it can be even catered, whatever it is that you're doing, you need to first off set the groundwork and ask all the participants if they have any strict dietary requirements, dietary prohibitions, religious ones, allergy ones, just don't eat that kind ones. Yes, you must ask. And it's not a secret. You must tell to everyone else so they don't bring something that will cause a problem. Also, when people bring and when you bring, you need to have a label on each dish. Not just a label that says what it is, stew. No, you need to have a label listing the ingredients. because there are many people in the world who have an allergy to something, and there may be something rather unusual. I've mentioned before that I have a friend who's allergic to vinegar, which is practically a condiment. You have people who are allergic, who have religious prohibitions, and who have dietary restrictions. And we're creating a convivial, good time atmosphere. You don't want to make anyone sick or offended or in some way hysterical. We're going to have a good time together so that we want to come and deal with the issues at hand again. It's something we want to do, something that we want to focus on. So please, we must label everything that is brought to eat. Now, well, I think that the host, which is usually us, right? I think that the host, and I think this from experience, should always have extra food on hand. Yes, sometimes people don't quite remember to bring something or whatever. And I am very much in favor of having a safe recipe for at least one of the items that I bring. Now, what's a safe recipe? It's something that doesn't have too terrible many ingredients. The ingredients are fairly common, so that pretty much everybody knows if they can eat them or not. And nothing is really hidden inside. It's not like putting ground peanuts in the sauce or something. It's not a hidden thing. It's fairly obvious what's in there, although we're still going to label it, right? Right. Now, this week, our safe recipe is going to be tofu and vegetable skewers. I have been accused by a lot of you, yes. I've gotten emails that say that I don't ever do much vegetarian. You know, you can indeed substitute with any of these recipes, and tofu is often used as a substitution for meat or for protein, and it needs to be flavored, pardon me, depending on the recipe. But this one is really straightforward. So it's just a straightforward skewer. We're going to take two big red bell peppers, and we're going to seed them and vein them and cut them into nice chunks, nice squares. And we're going to have four zucchinis, and we're going to cut those into thick slices, thick, we're going to call it chunks. And then we're going to have about a pound of firm tofu, the kind that's nice. You know how they come in different firmnesses. At least they do in the States. But you need something that's firm and not the squishy kind. Let's see. I'm going to say 16 cherry tomatoes because they look so nice on this. You can, of course, use a Roman tomato if you want to and cut them in half if you can't find cherry tomatoes. But something that is a firm tomato with skin kind of mostly all around so that it can withstand being grilled, withstand being broiled, and will look nice and not go squishy on the skewer. We need the same amount of nice big mushrooms, 2 tablespoons of mustard. I personally like the Dijon mustard, the whole grain Dijon, something that's got a wee bit of a texture and a bite to it, not the yellow kind that you put on hot dogs. 2 tablespoons of honey and 4 tablespoons of olive oil. And so while we're doing this, we're going to preheat the broiler so that it's nice and hot. Now, we're going to cut the pepper. We're going to make that into chunks, right? The zucchini already into chunks. And we're going to take the tofu. We're going to give it a nice drain and a pat all around so it's not wet. And we're going to cut that into about 1 to 1.5 inch squares. Nice chunks also. And if I may say, I really think that kind of a procedure needs a very sharp knife that you might even consider just wetting slightly as you go through it. You don't want to put a lot of liquid into this because you've bothered to drain it and to pat it off. But if you don't use a really sharp knife, you will squish the tofu. And believe me, I know this from personal experience. Because I don't use tofu that much. It's like, oh my, that's not good. And if you squish it, it will come off the skewers and just break up, and it's going to be no good. Okay, so we're actually going to do like you think. We're going to thread the pepper and the zucchini and the tofu and the little tomatoes and the mushrooms alternately, you know, in lines on the skewers. Now, I think that you can use 16 skewers for this. Did I not put that in the ingredients? Well, they're not food. Okay, 16 skewers. Oftentimes, in the States at least, you see either metal skewers, which are reusable, or the little wooden ones. And if you use the wooden skewers, because we're going to put this under the broiler, you need to soak them, soak them in water for a little while, just so that when you broil them, you don't get them to burn on the edges. No, they won't catch fire, but they will indeed make charred edges, and it will not be a good smell in the kitchen. It won't be a wonderful aroma. So we've got everything on the skewers, right? We've got 16 skewers. We've got alternating with the peppers, the tomatoes, the tofu, and the zucchini. Now we're going to take all of our wet ingredients, the mustard, the honey, and the olive oil, and we're going to whisk them together. Because what we're doing is we're making a glaze for the skewers. And we're going to stick our kebabs on their baking sheet. And we're going to brush them with this lovely glaze. I actually like to use a pastry brush. You could do as you please. You can kind of drizzle them on. But I think if you use a pastry brush, you get all the nooks and crannies of the skewers. So you brush them all the way around. You turn them around. You brush them on the other side. And you bake them. Well, actually, you put them under the broiler, or under, you know, we call it a broiler here. It's oftentimes called a grill, right? Right. We're going to put them under the grill for about 7 minutes, 6-7 minutes, until they're nice and cooked. And you're going to want to turn them one time, being careful not to burn yourself. You're going to turn them one time during the cooking process and give them another slather with the glaze, so that they're delicious. This looks lovely. Most people do not have a dietary, religious, or allergic prohibition, although it does have tomatoes. You will put down on your labeling what it is that you glazed it with so that everybody can make a judgment whether they can eat it. And it looks lovely on the plate. Oftentimes, I think that this should be served with a side bowl of nice rice, of nice cooked rice, because people then can take as much as they want, and then they can push the vegetables off the skewer onto the rice. Very nice, very, very lovely. And then you don't have to try to pick each piece off as you eat it, which is a wee bit messy. And so I like to serve rice with it, some nice cooked rice. And that was our safe recipe for this show, because it is easily seen what it is. Yeah. Now, let's go on to our adventure recipe. And our adventure recipe is a little bit more complicated, has a little more ingredients, but also it has several things that people might not be able to eat. And, well, I guess they're not non-obvious, but we need to label it. As it has eggs. Some people cannot eat eggs. And it has ham, which is a pork item, of course, and a lot of different kinds of religions and personal preference prevent you from eating pork. So, you can, yes, of course, people are already asking, yes, you can modify this any way you want and put a different protein in. Well, listen to the recipe first before you ask me about fish, because I think it should be a denser protein.
A seasoned chicken, something like that. People ask about rabbit all the time. Something that's a little denser. And remember my rule that whatever it is you're using, if it's damp, pat it dry so it doesn't make things wet. And cook it, for heaven's sakes. Don't just throw raw stuff in and expect it to cook within the dish. Make sure it's browned on all sides and it's pretty much cooked before you get it in there. Yes, that's my recommendation. Okay, and so this is going to be a baked pasta and egg tart. Now, it's really a frittata. I called it a frittata on the preview because it doesn't have a crust. But you need the kind of a baking dish that is round and even on the sides, not like a pie tin which slants. It's like a tart baking dish, the kind that it doesn't have to be too deep, but it can't be really tiny, really low sides either. But it needs to be even all around and not slanted on the sides. So we're going to preheat our oven to 350. And we're going to grease this lovely tart dish that it's round and it's even. Sometimes they're called a flan dish, something like that, something you might make a custard in. Because we're making really an egg dish and it has no crust. But you want to be able to make a wedge out of it and to have it bake fairly evenly. So now we've got the preheated oven, we've got the greased lovely dish. We're now going to have about an ounce of butter, a little bit better. 6 ounces, about a half pound of mushrooms that we're going to slice. A nice big red pepper that we're going to seed and we're going to chop it. 6 ounces of ham, the pre-cooked kind, and I like to shred that to make it into little pieces so that it gets all over the dish and you don't have clumps. You don't have a spot where there's no ham and a spot where there is ham, too much ham. Then we're going to have 3/4 cup of frozen peas that you've defrosted. Yes, if you're a finer person than I am, use fresh peas, but you have to cook them, right? And so I like to use frozen. They're perfectly nice. 6 large eggs, a whole cup of cream, 4 ounces of spaghetti that's been cooked. Any kind of pasta will do. If you've got leftover plain pasta, this is fine. Do not use something that, of course, has had sauce on it, or my rule about leftovers, if you wouldn't eat it straight, don't put it in something because its time has come. So about 4 ounces of pasta that we're going to cook al dente, and we're going to do something unusual with it. We're going to chop it into little pieces because it's going to create the density in our frittata, which is basically an egg dish, right? Right. We're going to have about 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley and a half cup of grated Parmesan cheese. So we've got all of our ingredients. We've got the butter, the mushrooms, the pepper, the ham, frozen peas, eggs, cream, pasta that's been cooked and chopped, and fresh basil, and then about a half cup of Parmesan cheese, which we're going to pour over the whole thing just before we bake it, which is going to make a lovely cheese crust on the top. So we're going to melt the butter in a nice big pan, and we're going to add the mushrooms and then cook them over low heat for about 3 minutes until they become edible, until they become softened. Then we're going to add the pepper, and we're going to cook it for another minute. And then we're going to add the ham and the peas, and we're going to cook those for a minute. And here's the tricky part. Because a frittata is basically an egg dish, the peppers, the ham, the peas, the mushrooms, the oil that we just made, and it's all nice and hot. If you throw that directly into the egg mixture, you are gonna have scrambled eggs. It's too hot. The thing's going to curdle. So you got to allow the mixture that you've just made to cool off. Does it have to be ice cold? No. But it needs to cool somewhat so that when it hits the eggs, you don't get the eggs and the milk and stuff, you don't get the curdling. You don't get the, oops, I am accidentally making scrambled eggs and that didn't work. So we've got everything sitting in the pan and we're cooling it slightly, right? We're going to whisk the eggs and the cream together. You might put a pinch of salt in this if you felt like it. You can now add to the whisked eggs and the cream, we're going to add the chopped pasta, the parsley, and our now not hot, but lukewarm mushroom and pepper mixture that we just made. So we've put whisked the eggs and the cream, we've added the pasta, and now we're adding the mushroom mixture. It's now all blended together. We're going to take this whole lovely mixture, and we're going to pour it into our prepared dish that we just did, the nice squeezed dish, and we're going to sprinkle it really nice and liberally with the Parmesan cheese on top. You've got plenty. Just kind of do it evenly. And then we're going to bake it for about half an hour. And when you get all done, and it's all baked, and it's all bubbly and brown on top and yummy, if you let it cool for about a few minutes, all of you who have been with me before know that I'm a great believer in letting things set for about 5 minutes before cutting them, because you'll get a cleaner slice. But this will actually slice out as wedges, like out of a pie almost, and it is very delicious. It holds together nicely. People are saying it's a quiche. You know, it is kind of a cross between a quiche and like a frittata. I usually think that a quiche is somewhat more custardy in texture. And generally speaking, a quiche has a crust. And this makes a nice solid piece, a nice wedge. But you've noticed that we did not put a crust anywhere in the pan. We've got the crust of the Parmesan cheese on the top, but not a pastry-type crust around the edges. So this makes a lovely dish. Everybody likes it. It's delicious. It needs to be labeled carefully. And it is our adventure recipe, because it has some items that people might indeed be unable to eat. And you don't want to give them a nasty surprise, right? Right. So, we have now come to the end of another one of our shows. Thank you very, very much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your wonderful ideas and comments. I hope to see you, to have you come again. If you wish to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. And the last five radio shows are archived on the website that we just talked about, the most recent five. And all of them are archived on the radio station at www.blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for coming, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you for all of your participation. Bye-bye.